SBS Radio.
Whatamoolie, this is NITV Radio and I'm Kerry Lee Harding.
Well, it's that time of the week again where we get to yarn all things science and technology with Ray Johnston, science and technology journalist. Welcome to the program this afternoon, Ray.
Oh, thanks for having me, sis.
Good to have you back again this week. As we do each week, it's good to talk all things science and tech. And first cab off the rank today, you're going to tell us about a story where Earth has a hot new neighbour. Do tell me more.
Yeah. There's a newly discovered planet that could be our best chance yet of studying rocky planet atmospheres outside of our own solar system. So this is from a new study that also involves University of New South Wales, Sydney, but it's an international team like most astronomical studies are. You know, we usually collaborate with places all over the world for these. And this planet is called Gliese 486b, which is, you know, not the most compelling name. They always have some letters and numbers. But it's a super Earth. So it means it's a rocky planet that's bigger than Earth, but it's smaller than, you know, like the ice giants like Neptune or Uranus. And it orbits around a red dwarf star, which is around 26 light years away. So that makes it a close neighbour, galactically speaking. And it has a piping hot surface temperature of 430 degrees Celsius. So
wow.
It is definitely too hot to support human life. But studying its atmosphere, it could help us learn, you know, whether similar planets might be habitable for humans or if they're likely to hold, you know, other signs of life. So this is the kind of planet that researchers have been dreaming about for decades. You know, we've known for a really long time that rocky super-Earths, they must exist around our nearby stars, but we haven't had the technology to search for them until recently. So this can really transform our understanding of the atmospheres of other planets. And you know, like Earth, you know, Gliese is a rocky planet, but it's not similar to Earth in any other way. So that surface, which is so hot, it's hot enough to melt lead. It could have glowing lava rivers on it. And the super Earths themselves, they're not rare. But this one is special for two reasons. So the first one is that the heat on that surface, it puffs up the atmosphere, which helps astronomers make measurements of the atmosphere. And secondly, it's a transiting planet, which means it crosses in front of its star from Earth's perspective so that we can see it a lot better and we can really study that atmosphere a lot closer. And understanding super-Earths, it's pretty challenging because we don't have any close examples in our backyard. So Gliese is the type of planet that we're definitely going to be studying for at least the next 20 years. It's very exciting.
Two deadly sis, really good to learn about what's out there in space. Now we move on to our next story. And apparently to sustain a thriving cafe culture, apparently we must ditch the disposable cup. What's this all about?
Yeah, so, you know, takeaway coffees, they're a pretty convenient start for, turns out, millions of people a day. But those disposable cups, there's nearly 300 billion of them ending up in landfill each year. And you know, while most people that drink coffee are really happy to make a switch to more sustainable practices, you know, the current amount of coffee cup waste that we're producing is just really unsustainable. And it needs a change from, you know, individuals and the coffee shops themselves and government agencies as well. Because, you know, once people are educated on using single-use coffee cups, you know, we don't really want to use them anymore. But knowing that it's the right thing to do and actually doing it are two different things. And there's a few barriers that are in our way. So, you know, for example, if your favourite coffee shop, if it doesn't have recyclable or compostable cups, that's not going to stop you from getting a coffee. You know, we need that coffee and we need it now at those times of the day. And then you've got these arty, you know, pattern paper cups as well. And you can look at them and think that you are buying a recyclable or recycled option. But most takeaway coffee cups are lined with a waterproof plastic, which isn't recyclable, and it's also a contaminant. It's toxic for the environment. So, you know, if you do happen to have your favourite coffee shop that does give you recyclable coffee cups, when you're finished, then you've got to put it somewhere. And, you know, these compostable coffee cups, you know, that break down, they need to go in those green organics bins, not just the recycled bins, but you don't really see them hanging out on the streets. So we end up chucking them in the normal bin or the recycle bin, and eventually they end up in landfill. So I think the more that we can educate people on using reusable cups, like the Keep cups, the better we're going to see, you know, the impact on the environment. But we also need to be chatting with our councils about putting those green organics bins around the place so that we can, you know, put those recyclable or compostable coffee cups in the right place.
I naturally assume, Sis, that all coffee cups were recyclable, but my mother always told me never to assume anything.
That's it, yeah. No, you would think by looking at them that you could, you know, chuck the tops in the plastic recycle and, you know, the paper would go in the paper recycle, but turns out that's not the case. And yeah, we have to be a little bit more careful about what we're doing because, yeah, 300 billion coffee cups in landfill, that's a lot, and we can really do something about it.
I think that's too much, and another reminder to myself to keep using my Keep cups, which are stuck in my cupboard at home, Sis. Not good.
Yeah, I always carry one around in my bag, but, you know, then I use it once and, you know, you've got to find somewhere to rinse it out. It can be a little bit inconvenient, and I think that we just need to get into the habit of it being normal.
I'm with you on that one, Sis. Now we go from talking about coffees and cafe culture and ditching disposable cups to talking about air quality guidelines. Apparently, they do not adequately protect Australians. Do tell me more.
Yes, so there's these thresholds for air quality, you know, the amount of contaminants that are allowed in a certain area, and they're just not high enough, it turns out. You know, a group of Aussie researchers have been looking at this, and it's not enough to protect community health. The current guidelines, the way that they're working, it's like a balance between the risk to our health and how much it's going to cost, like industry and government and the people that have to put them in place, to put them in place. So it's not prioritising our health over money. You know, it's putting the regulators in a position where they have to go, oh, you know, is this going to stop this big project from going ahead? And you know, when it comes to making that kind of decision, they're always going to err on the side of letting the project go ahead. There's also no incentives for reducing exposure to harmful pollutants. You know, as long as the levels stay below the set thresholds, you know, no one's getting rewarded or patted on the back or, you know, having extra money put into their project for reducing those pollutants as much as possible. So since there's no real incentive for regulators or industry to be improving air quality continuously, you know, our communities were not being protected from the health impacts of air pollution. So there needs to be some changes around this because air pollution can be really damaging to, you know, anyone who's got reduced lung capacity or deals with things like asthma. And, you know, we've all seen people who were impacted by even the smoke from last year's bushfires, and those health impacts are continuing. So air quality is something that's really important to be looking at, and we should be rewarding people that are trying to do the right thing here, you know, not just ignoring them.
I hear you, Sis. That's a really important story, that air quality guidelines do not adequately protect Australians. I'm quite surprised.
Yeah, I was surprised when I heard that as well. And yeah, looking into it a little bit deeper, I can't really see why they wouldn't put, you know, a few more incentives in place. You know, it shouldn't be about money. It should always be about people. But even this is something that, you know, shouldn't really be costing much or anything at all to be able to say, hey, you know, have a certificate or something. I'm sure we can work something out, don't you reckon?
That is what I was going to ask you. What incentives can we put in place?
Yeah, well, I mean, we could do things like, you know, even just having awards or certifications or, you know, like a little logo that businesses could put on their business collateral, just to be able to let people know that this is a responsible business that cares about air quality and air pollution. I think, you know, once we start putting these standards in place and, you know, people get rewarded for it, then they're more likely to do it, aren't they? But if there's nothing there, then what's the drive? Why would they even bother?
I hear you, sis. I think that's about all for today's segment. Thank you so much for joining us, Ray Johnston, science and technology journalist. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Anytime.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.